The question is really, did I ever love Jesus?
Oh, snap.
Right? So
you were raised in the church, man.
So, but yeah, raised in the church doesn't mean that I love Jesus. I think that really and truly, if I were to really kind of think about it, I was never a believer at the core. I think I was involved in a lot of performative Christianity.
Well, hello and welcome to our very first episode of Church for Atheists podcast.
I'm Kumar Dixit, and I'm an ordained minister of an evangelical church that will go unnamed.
And I am Michael. I'm Michael Clark. I'm actually a former, well, Kumar likes to use the word parishioner. I hate parishioner as a word. A church attendant, I would prefer to say. So I used to attend Kumar's church for a long time, but now I no longer attend any church. I'm really kind of the black sheep of, well, my family and of my entire friend circle. And I am an agnostic-leaning atheist.
What the heck does that mean? First of all, let's just go back to the word parishioner, okay? you were my sheep, okay? And now you're like my lost sheep that I'm out. I've left the flock, Michael, to go chasing you
because,
out
you in see? The field. Doesn't the Bible talk about leaving the flock and going after the one that's lost? Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do if you want to be like David or whoever.
And now it's cold.
I know things. I know now Bible things.
Now it's cold and windy out there as I'm outside of the gates looking for you.
You're supposed to go find every lost one of your flock.
Okay, so are you, like, give me a definition between atheist and agnostic.
So actually, I would say more accurately, I am an atheist-leaning agnostic. So agnostic meaning I am not particularly tied to any particular belief around whether or not a God exists, but open to the idea that that's possible. Atheist-leaning because I think it's highly unlikely that there is a God. So I'm kind of almost all the way into the atheist column, but I like to leave a little room for, you know, who knows what.
If people maybe there's hope. Something. Maybe it gives your family hope, right? If you're like, oh,
that
well.
Too. I think it's easier on them.
Yeah. Well, it's very true. You were one of my gold star members, church members. I think we met almost probably over 15 years ago, and you and your spouse were amazing church members. You were active and involved. You were all go, like, just showing up to stuff. And like,
were we active and involved?
Can I remind you, weren't you like on my church board?
I was on the church
exactly.
board.
Exactly. Okay.
I was on the church board for a very short period of time, but then I had to drop out.
Yeah, clearly. So, you know, I think people are probably going to assume that this podcast is about me bringing Michael back to the fold and trying to convert him. But let's just start from the very beginning, Michael. So we'll lose like the one listener who's all excited on how to like evangelize an atheist. But that's not really the point of this podcast. Is that right?
Well, you know, many a person have tried to actually bring me back into the flock. So, I mean, the one listener that we have who is hopeful, you know, don't give up hope. You never can tell. It could happen. Maybe. Unlikely.
See an online conversion. That'll be exciting. Right. But really, the point of this podcast isn't to change Michael's mind or to go into deep theological or philosophical conversations about religion. It's just to chit-chat.
Good. Well, I'm glad that we clear that up.
Because, yeah.
You've already put in a lot of years in trying that. So it's really a moot point at this point. But
yeah, it's just two friends who see things very differently, and yet we're still very good friends.
Yeah, and we like to talk. So
yeah,
we're talking with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this fellowship.
Oh, there's another word you like. Are we going to fellowship? We're going to fellowship. We're going to commune together.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. You know, when I was studying to be a pastor, my friend Eddie had been my friend. You know, we've been friends from 12 years old. And one day, I mean, so he knows like the real Kumar, like 12-year-old Kumar all the way up, right? And so I'm in school for theology. And one day we're just having a normal conversation, like not about religion. Like it's like at Burger King or something. He says something. And I look at him. I nod. I'm like, you know, I really, really affirm you for that. And he was like, bro, seriously? He's like, no, don't even start the church talk, okay? Yeah. Don't even start that. So
I can completely identify with Eddie. That completely triggers me. I'm easily triggered by by youth pastor talk, is what I call it. You affirm me.
I affirm you.
And we're going to fellowship together. No, we're not going to fellowship. We're going to hang out. Yeah, we're going to virtually hang out, and we're going to talk nonsense and fun stuff and maybe some serious stuff too. And it'll be fun.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we've talked about is kind of formatting this podcast kind of like an order of service, right? So if you grew up in the church, you know that there's elements of a worship service. There's the morning prayer, which is, we're going to kind of call the meditation. There's a confessional. A lot of churches have a time where they confess their sins. I don't know if we're going to have to make this an MA rated show for Michael, but are we really going to confess our sins? Or are we going to just blow steam that we are tired of hearing and just get it off our chest?
I think we could do a little of both. I mean, I think confession is good for the soul, isn't it?
Can I start with a confession?
Sure.
Okay, this is my confession. And I don't know if and when this podcast is ever going to air and what when it's going to air. So I think it's safe to say it now. Okay. Okay. Allegedly, somebody in my...
I'm already not believing you.
Allegedly, somebody in my home was tested for COVID yesterday.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. And they were taken to the ER, not the ER, the urgent care. Uh-huh. Do you know in my town there's an urgent care that's called Ouch? O-U-C-H.
Is there an exclamation point at the end?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's
there's an exclamation.
So extra.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So I took this 12-year-old to allegedly.
Well,
took
now you're giving all
no,
kinds
no,
of
no, 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 no. Let me start over. This I allegedly took this young person, child girl, to the urgent care, and they wouldn't like even let her see a doctor or anything until she got a COVID test. Uh-huh. So she had a lot of symptoms, sneezing, coughing, runny nose, major, major, major congestion, a little bit of a fever here and there, if you really want to count it or if I really checked it properly.
You know, none of these are like really strong COVID symptoms, right?
Do you know out of the five things we had to circle, four of them were, we had to circle it. So then she got scared. So anywho, here's my confession. My confession is we could possibly have a COVID patient in our house. Unlikely, but we could. So do I have to like now start telling everybody around us? Like we've canceled our whole weekend plans. We have people coming over tonight. It's canceled. We were going to go do a drive-by birthday party tomorrow. It's canceled. But do I have, like, I have a friend coming over tomorrow morning to help me, like, trim some trees. Like, because yes. I may be exposed.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I have to tell?
Yes. Yes. Well, you don't have to tell everyone, but you need to not be in, you need to not fellowship with anyone.
Fellowship. So, fellowship. Yeah. Ooh. There you go. You
bring
are like
fellowship.
Yeah.
Word for the day. I think we need a word for the day.
I like that. A word for the day is fellowship.
Yes.
So but okay, here's the deal. I'm gonna be this is confession moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right?
Yes.
Okay. And by the way, we'll talk about our backgrounds in a minute, but Michael is a nurse, so that's why I'm asking him these medical questions. I have chronic pain. You know that, right? I'm on chronic pain. I take pain meds. I'm a pain addiction, pain pill killer addiction person.
I'm not sure you want to label yourself as that.
I love NSAIDs.
You like some acupuncture.
Yeah. So this is what my point is. My body is erect. Yes. So I finally got my acupuncture.
It doesn't look great either. You guys can't see, but his body is... All right. That's an aside.
Was my body, did you say wrecked or erect?
Well, you tell me if it's erect. I don't know. I said it's A wreck.
A wreck. Okay. Yeah. I heard a wreck.
But, you know, I have that effect on people. So maybe that's true.
Exactly. So, okay. I finally get in to see my acupuncturist yesterday. My body's wrecked. And she's like finally seeing patients in the office. She's going to do cupping. She's going to do needling. She's going to do the full, she'll do gua sha.
Can we pause for a second and rewind to the cupping? Because the last time you did cupping, it was super gross.
It does leave marks. Does leave marks. But it feels good. And so I called her like a half an hour before and I was like, yo, I just want to be honest with you. I did take my daughter this afternoon to go get a COVID test and I don't want you to feel uncomfortable. And she was like, thank you so much for telling me. That's really, really like the right thing to do. And yes, I'm going to cancel your appointment.
You see, that's why you need to tell people.
No, I don't tell people because then I'm not going to get accurate. And now I'm in pain.
Hold on. Exactly. And you suck your pain up on your own. So first of all, let's go back. So we're in the middle of a pandemic. Not sure when you're listening to this. So who knows? It could be years from now that somebody's listening to this recording. And I will not be on the record as a nurse not telling you that obviously you need to physically distance from people if you're exposed to somebody who is what we would call a person under investigation, a PUI.
Oh, PUI, I like that.
You have a PUI in your house. So until you get results back, you should not be exposing anyone else to your potential COVID-19.
Now, let's say this alleged child girl is COVID positive.
Yes.
Should I get tested as well?
I mean, sure, why not?
I mean,
how's that for a good medical answer? So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that there's no need to really get tested in your case unless you're having symptoms and unless your symptoms actually get really bad. Because at the end of the day, treatment-wise, there's nothing that we would do for you medically unless you were having significant symptoms. So,
hey, but here's my point. If I get tested and I'm COVID positive and I'm asymptomatic, that means like for the next year, I don't have to wear a mask because I've already got it. I'm not going to get it again.
Who told you that? Where are you getting this propaganda? We don't know how long immunity lasts and if there's even any immunity that people get or if you could get it twice. Have you ever gotten the flu twice in one season?
No.
You haven't? Well, that happens all the time.
My two Republican friends on Facebook say that you can't get it twice.
You have a whole two Republican friends on Facebook?
I do. That's a whole different show because it's ridiculous. Yeah,
I know. Do I know them? Like,
thank God, no. But why are they all in Florida? And they don't even know each other, but they're all like in Florida.
I don't know. Isn't there a convention or something?
No. All right. Let's go back to our backstory, Michael. Let's just let our listeners know a little bit about your journey, how you went from loving Jesus to having Jesus cry. And then I'll share a little bit about my backstory as well.
The question is really, did I ever love Jesus?
Oh, snap.
Right?
You were raised in the church, man.
So, but yeah, raised in the church doesn't mean that I love Jesus. I think that really and truly, if I were to really kind of think about it, I was never a believer. At the core, I think I was involved in a lot of performative Christianity.
You didn't ever cry like in a sermon. You didn't like stand
up. So you have seen me sit close to the front row in many a sermon next to you, with you on the stage. Have you ever seen me cry?
No.
Yeah, I don't have that in me. It's because I'm not, generally speaking, I'm not moved by sermons. I grew up in a really conservative Christian household, well, part conservative. My parents were both Anglicans initially. And then my mom, when she was super pregnant with me, converted to a much more conservative Christian faith than she had grown up with. And so she actually got baptized, like full immersion baptized, when she was 8 months pregnant with me, which as an aside, and I'm sure this will come up a lot.
So you were baptized yourself, bro. I mean, when you think about it, double baptized.
Yeah, I got double dipped.
Yeah.
Double dipped, yes.
Wow.
So she actually thinks that that's why the devil is after me extra hard. Because, you know, actually truly feel this way. So, but the point is that, so she got baptized and then was like all in. So my childhood was very, very, very in church. Like, all weekend in church at home. There was lots of praying, lots of hymn singing. It was just, it was pretty conservative. So that's how I grew up. And so the easiest thing to do was actually to just kind of go along and go with the flow. I was always kind of like an outlier in my family and at the church. I always had outrageous thoughts. I always thought it was crazy that people believed in, you know, an invisible God. I always thought that the Bible was ridiculous and there were ridiculous stories that people would just kind of accept as if it was normal.
Like what?
But obviously, like, it was,
like Jonah, yeah. Like Jonah being gobbled up by a big boat, a big fish.
You see, Jonah is like the basic example. No, I feel like I have deeper, bigger issues with just like basic concepts, concepts like salvation and sin and original sin and the need for salvation and the how just barbarous and primitive it is that sacrifice is involved in the Christian plan for salvation, which I think is even, you know, an unnecessary thing to begin with. So yeah, I think I just always, even as a child, thought it was all kind of hooey, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
So, but then at some point, I mean, there was constant pressure because I was super involved in church because, you know, I'm like, you know, I bring a lot. Don't I bring a lot to church?
You're a natural leader, man.
I'm a natural. There you go. So I was a leader at church. I did all kinds of things. I led like youth services and did a whole bunch of stuff in church. And the ministers at church were always kind of pushing me to ask, like, when are you going to get baptized, Michael? You're leading church services, you got to get baptized. And one day I randomly did it, didn't tell my parents or anything, just kind of decided on the fly, I'm going to do it today because I wanted to keep a low profile. Mm-hmm. I was not looking for fanfare. Mm. And I knew my mother would like cry and like act crazy if she thought.
So were your parents there?
My mom was there. Yeah. Okay. But they were there. I mean, well, my mom was there and my siblings were there. My dad didn't go to our church, but So I got baptized at kind of just on the fly.
So they didn't get a chance to like plan and prepare and like.
Absolutely not.
Boil the goat and have a big party.
No, what I should do with that? Boil what goat, Kumar?
I mean.
Why would you think a goat would be involved?
What should I have said instead? Like,
I don't know.
Made pasta? Are you inferring that that was a racist undertone?
It's at minimum, an undertone. At maximum. So,
go ahead. Tell your story about growing up in Guyana.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was about to say, so if you haven't picked up right now from my accent, I was born in Guyana and I actually lived there and grew up there until I was 15 when I moved to America. So anyways, that's where all of this is going on. So no, there was no boiled goat involved. But I dodged the bullet in terms of like a big celebration and hoopla around getting baptized, even though after it happened, my mom kind of just carried on and cried and hugged and it was all very extra. And so that was kind of, that led into college. I went to a Christian college. And again, I think I continued on the performative Christianity because it just was what people did around. And I, you know, didn't really care too much to do anything different. And it wasn't until, well, maybe Kumar, maybe you were the one that really kind of deconverted me.
No,
it wasn't until I met you that things went downhill.
No, I don't think so.
I think my mom actually might think that that's the case. Because it wasn't until, I would say, early adulthood that I really kind of started thinking more about what I believe and assessing it from, you know, from A through Z and asking the question why I was really kind of having this performative Christianity and if it really brought anything positive to my life. And I kind of came to the conclusion that no, I don't really believe. I never really believed, and I was going to stop pretending. So that's the very long story made relatively short, but I'm sure that as we go along, you'll hear more details.
And so you've kind of, I mean, when it comes down to like practicing faith, like things like going to church and being in a church community and things like that, have you just completely like expelled yourself from that, or do you still have some connections?
I have tons of connections to church because my family is so Christian. And so a lot of the cultural and familial just like rituals are, you know, church involved. So like they're attached to church. A lot of my closest friends, are still very involved in church. So I am still connected to church. My kids are pretty connected to church. And so I'm definitely connected personally. I mean, I try to avoid services as much as possible because, you know, it just feels like time I can't get back. I mean, I do enjoy a good, you know, a good entertaining sermon, but yeah. I try to avoid church in general.
I will say that your girls are somewhat active in church. I'm their youth leader, so I know that they're involved in some levels of church. So even though it's not for you, you've kind of given them the choice to decide if they want to be part of it at some level. Is that correct?
Oh my goodness, yes. So I firmly believe that everybody needs to come to their own conclusion. And again, I think there's so many positive things about church. I think one of the hardest things for me about my deconversion, so to speak, from Christianity was the shift of out of church. I think church was such a big part of my social life and routine on the weekends that when church stopped feeling worthwhile or when it stopped feeling authentic was really, really difficult for me because it felt like a loss. Like I had to grieve the loss of church, but I also knew that church was not bringing me any particular happiness and it felt inauthentic. So I knew that I couldn't continue being a Christian in air quotes and kind of pretending to believe because that was exceptionally draining. But leaving the church again, in air quotes, definitely wasn't easy. It was a very kind of dramatic thing in my head because of the shift in the social aspects of it. So
yeah, in fact, I was listening to a podcast just last week. There's a new podcast out called Haystacks, and mm-hmm. it's for people who left the Seventh-day Adventist Church and their journey out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I'm friends with the podcast host. And Bonnie, the wife, said something so interesting. She said, the scariest and saddest part of our journey was that as we were exiting, there was no one on the other side waiting for us. Uh-huh. You know, it was kind of like a no man's land. You know, they just knew it was time to go, but they had no idea what was on the other side of the road. And I think that's takes a tremendous amount of courage for people like them and you who kind of just realize this isn't right for me. And I don't know what it, do you ever watch the movie, The Truman Show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I always think of that, like that moment where he's like in the boat and he comes to the very end of like the green screen.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's after this?
Yes.
You know, and that's kind of like what I'm hearing you say is it's a very difficult journey to like leave something that you grew up in. And it's also very lonely, but it's also just a courageous thing, I think, is what I want to say to you too.
Yeah, I mean, that resonates with me a lot. The Truman Show example and what Bonnie described, it definitely felt, well, you just feel like you're out just without any infrastructure in a way. So a church, I think lots of people live a life where their spirituality or their religion is very superficial in a way, and it's not fully integrated into their lives. But when you're a super conservative Christian and church is like your everything and all of your friends are at church and like a lot of your, I mean, your entire weekend is wrapped up in church and your day-to-day life is wrapped up in church and your kids go to, you know, Christian school. It is so much of just the entire scaffolding and framework of your life that if and when you leave that, it is very dramatically empty on the other side. And I try to explain that to my friends and family who always ask, but why would you do it anyway? And I think that to me, that speaks to how much I don't believe in God in that way, because it's not like it's an easy thing. I mean, I think that in a lot of ways, it would be easier to kind of just, you know, go along to get along. Leaving or making it clear that you're, you know, no longer a believer, especially when everybody around you is, I mean, now it's been several years, so I don't get this anymore. But in the beginning, it was just lots of, you know, people trying to reconvert you, and it's lots of questions and people crying and praying over you. My mom's still crying and praying over me, thinking that I'm going to hell.
Sacrificing another goat.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, that's what we do in Guyana. We just boil goats and sacrifice. Which, as a total aside, I actually grew up, I had some goats.
Oh, really?
They were never boiled.
Yeah.
We had pet goats.
I did too, believe it or not.
Yes.
But can we talk about that next episode? Because my pet goat story and your pet goat story are probably very dissimilar.
Did yours end up boiled?
Possibly.
Let's save that for next episode.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't want Peter to come after us right out the gate.
Exactly. I'm gonna jump in and just share a little bit of my story. Is that okay?
Yeah. Did you ask me if it was okay? Yes,
yeah.
It's okay, Mark.
No, I wasn't sure if you were finished with, you know, sharing your journey.
I'll allow it. Go ahead.
All right, let's continue in the fellowship. I'm an ordained minister, and my story is very different. I mean, I grew up, I was born and raised in the church, three generations in the church. In fact, the white missionaries came and saved my family in India and converted them. In exchange,
are you so grateful?
In exchange for an education. That's how they kind of converted people back then. It was like, hey, we'll take your kids to a Christian boarding school and they'll get free education in exchange for getting the Christian card.
Hold on, are you acting like we still don't do that?
That's another story. But yeah, so my grandfather was converted. He became a pastor. And from a very early age, I don't know if you know this, Michael, like since I was born, I've always known that I was going to be a minister. And part of that is like me, there's kind of this story that I've been telling myself, this narrative that God made it known that I was going to be a minister since I was born. But the truth is that my parents are the ones who told me I was going to be a minister since I was born. So they like, now I was a sick baby and they're like, you were sick and we prayed for you and we promised God that we would make you a minister. And so I had no choice but to be a minister. So it was
a sick baby.
That's what they claim. And who knows? I may have had like, you know, like a runny nose or something and they just threw me to the altar, you know.
Exactly. And then God said, no, he has to be a minister.
Exactly.
And we'll heal him of his cold.
Yeah. So for my entire life, I've always known and been called to be a pastor. And I've trained for it. I was a youth preacher at 14. I was preaching and traveling around the Midwest, preaching sermons. I was like one of those very excited people for Jesus. Okay, let's just say that.
So what you're saying is that you were annoying.
I was really annoying. I was part of what you
called Eddie on to talk about how annoying you were.
Well, I was part of what you called the God Squad in high school. You know, like I was the guy that like had, yeah, I'm not even get started. It's embarrassing. But, and then I pastored for many years. I've been very happy as a pastor. I've done a lot of things from pastoring and chaplaincy and church administration. And then one day I got fired, just literally like randomly. Like, you know how they say like one of the number one rules in HR is to never let someone don't let a firing be a surprise. Like, uh-huh. People should know it's coming. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. This didn't happen to me. They didn't know about the HR book. So I was given like an hour and I cleared up my stuff and I left. And then I was like, hey, I've been in the church for like 25 years. I'm going to get a job anywhere. Like, people know me from around the world. And guess what?
It didn't work out.
That's right.
That was a cliffhanger.
Exactly.
So for our listeners, I mean, I know where this ended.
Can you just play along a little bit? Like, come on.
I was playing along.
Oh my goodness. So
life is about authenticity.
Yeah. So no job, nothing. And I was like, whoa, what in the world? And so I had a real kind of come to Jesus experience. And, you know, my long end of the story is basically, I realized that I was called to be a pastor, but not necessarily within a prescribed church or denomination, at least for this season of my life. Like, I feel like God is calling me to encourage people, to help them, lead them to Him and give them encouragement and experience God's love, but I don't really need the structure of a denomination, especially if they don't want me. I hate you too. So
exactly. I didn't want you anyway.
Exactly. I never liked you. So I as a profession, I am a professional chaplain, and I work in a hospice, and I'm also a grief counselor. And I love it. It's an entirely new shift in career for me. I also started a new ministry called Concierge Minister. Do you know about this, Michael?
I do know about this.
Okay, so Concierge Minister, and the tagline is, the pastor you've always wanted without the church. and I sent it to some friends of mine to look at my website, and one of them was like, wow, that's really arrogant to assume that you're the one and only pastor people want without the church. And I was like, okay, I didn't mean it that way, but
no,
really?
I think it's perfectly appropriate.
Okay.
That's, I don't need it.
Yeah, so for me, it's like just getting rid of all the church junk, all the meetings, all, you know, the committee on the carpet color, and just stupid stuff that we do in church, and just really focus on helping people grow towards God. And so that's what I'm doing, and I'm super excited. I'm sad, and I've experienced a lot of grief not being connected to my church or denomination that I had for my entire life. But at the same time, I also feel like I'm able to connect and reach people in a way that I never could, because I was kind of held down by a lot of boundaries and rules. And I think people will kind of know that I tend to lean left and be more progressive in my Christian walk with God. And so there wasn't enough room or space at the table in my church, at least for right now, for me to have a place.
So that's really interesting. Do you think that you have like grown any or changed much since leaving the formal structure of a church?
Absolutely. And I don't even know if it's the word would be change. It would be almost like all the bars that were holding me in, just, you know, the institutional bars that you just kind of know you shouldn't talk about, or things that you can't agree with publicly, or I've just kind of been like, you know what, this is who I am, you know, and take it or leave it. And I just feel a lot more freedom to really express the way I believe God loves people.
So it's like you unbuckled your belt.
Yes, I can breathe.
Yes. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I think that you have actually grown tons since, you know, not leaving the church, but, you know, leaving the formal structure of being a church pastor.
Oh, good. In a positive way, I hope.
Definitely in a positive way. You know, I think it's been a good journey for you.
Cool. So let's finish talking about the elements of the worship service, because I got really sidetracked earlier.
Yes.
We have a call to worship. We do a confession, which I already gave a confession. Do you have a confession you want to share?
I don't have a confession right now, actually.
Okay. I don't like I hate when people do that. You know, like in prayer request time and people are like, silent prayer request. Like, no. Well, I hate silent prayer. Like, this is, we're like the body. Like, share what's on your heart. Why are you like, oh, silent, I'm too embarrassed to tell you what's going on in my life? Like, no. Then why am I supposed to tell you and trust you?
First of all, I have never, ever in my life been at a church service where I've thought to myself, ooh, I have a prayer request. Never. It has just never happened. I hate people who have prayer requests. I'm always like, why? What? You have a prayer? Those are like the same people who call you at home or expect you to come over to their house because like they're having a difficulty. I mean, I feel
that
like
you have
talkspace.com. Like, why are they calling you? All that said. You can never accuse me of having a silent prayer request. If I don't put my hand up, it's because I have zero prayer requests.
Okay. Okay.
Never had one.
I'm going to let you pass today. No confession.
Yeah. No, I have confessions, just not now. That's not what I have right now.
And
we are easily sidetracked.
Yes, very easily sidetracked. If you're looking for a show that follows an order, this is not the show for you.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have an order in mind, but, you know.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
There'll be a sermon every week, about a 10-minute sermon, and that sermon is really likely going to be an interview with somebody in the community or in the world who is experiencing whatever's going on in the world around us. Is that what we agreed on?
Oh, I love that you say that, and now you're going to ask if that's what we agreed on. I think the sermon segment is going to evolve. I think the sermon segment is really meant to be some kind of burning topic that's on our minds, or, you know, like you said, somebody who has something really interesting to say about where they find inspiration, or, you know, something that's happening in our culture that's really kind of important. So it'll evolve as we go along.
Okay. And then as we...
One thing he promises that it won't be boring.
That's that... Oh. Like sermons. You know,
I have nodded off in a sermon or two.
In one of my sermons?
I've never nodded off in one of your sermons.
Okay, good.
Because you're so upbeat.
Then the last part of our worship experience is, what is one thing that a pastor would never go without in worship?
Ooh, begging for money.
That's right, begging for money.
I was wondering if you were going to ask for money. We must have an offering segment.
Of course, we have to have an offering segment. So we're going to do an offering segment. And why don't you explain to our loyal listener what our offering segment's going to be about?
The offering segment actually is going to be a cool segment that we're going to focus on giving. And we're each going to talk about some cause or some organization that we think is worthy of, you know, giving to. So each week or each episode, we'll kind of tell you about the organization and kind of why we picked it. And we'll encourage you to donate and hope that you will check them out.
Yeah. So we want you to give just to other people and to make the world a better place. Right. And we have vetted them for the most part. Right.
Yes, for the most part. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the disclaimer for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, definitely disclaimer. Absolutely. Yeah.
So do you want to go first? Do you have an offering that you want to share?
I do have one, because I have one that I'm always pretty excited about. So as we mentioned earlier, we're in the middle of a pandemic. And one of the things that has happened, as you can imagine, is a lot of people have lost their jobs, and there's definitely a number of things that come from that. But one of the things that is particularly moving to me is the issue of food insecurity. And so in this episode, my offering recommendation is the Capital Area Food Bank. So the Capital Area Food Bank is a food bank in the DC metro area. And it actually serves thousands upon thousands of people who have food insecurity, people who live in food deserts, and they have had an increase in need recently due to everything that's going on with the pandemic. So there are a couple of ways that you could actually give to them. My favorite way, honestly, and I know that everyone has their own financial, you know, situation going on, but my favorite way to give, and the favorite way that really I think they like people to give, is through volunteering your time. So people who feel like they don't have money to give, or they don't want to donate money or even food in kind, you can actually donate your time. It's super cool and easy to do it. And what I love about them is that they make volunteering easy. You can just go to volunteer.capitalareafoodbank.org. You can sign up to be a volunteer. They have slots, and they'll tell you can do all different things from like sorting food to packing food. They have a whole bunch of different types of things that you can do. They ask that you wear a mask and bring your own mask, obviously, because we are, again, in the middle of a pandemic. But it's super easy to do that. Or you could donate money, or you could donate food. So, and if you are not in the DC metro area, I still think that you should just Google a food bank in your area and check them out. More than likely, they are in need of either volunteer hours from you and or money and or food. So I think that's definitely something that's worthwhile. Can you top that, Kumar? You have a useful and meaningful...
For me, it's the Wendt Center. Have you heard of the Wendt Center, Michael?
No. Spell?
So the Wendt Center, it's W-E-N... D is in David, T is in Tom, Wendt Center. They are a counseling organization in Washington, D.C. I actually sit on their board, and they are the one true amazing crisis counseling in the city. They're not just provide counseling, but they're also the trainers to counselors all throughout the city. If there's any kind of major domestic issue, there's like a gang rape or a brutal murder, the city of DC is the one that usually calls the WENT Center to ask them to step in and get involved. So they're fantastic clinicians. They're doing amazing things in the school systems. And here's the amazing thing. I was sitting on their a board meeting just recently, and they have like a 70% show rate, maybe it's like high 60s. But you know, when you go see a counselor, a lot of people end up just canceling for various reasons. But because of the pandemic, and now they're doing telemedicine, they're having like a 95% show rate, and it's exhausting their therapist. I mean, it's really, really like it, but it shows how people are not giving up. They need it more than ever, you know? And so they're a nonprofit. They do amazing work. And they also provide a summer camp for grieving kids who've lost a parent or a loved one every summer. And so I really love their work, and I support them financially and as a volunteer. And you can check them out at wentcenter.org. And I'll put their information on the show notes as well.
Good. That is a really, really good one, actually. I am very passionate about that cause. And I love that people are actually utilizing the service. So we just have to do our part to make sure that they can continue doing the good work that they do.
Exactly.
How did you get on the board? We have to talk about screening. That's the only questionable part of this.
You would be surprised some of the boards I sit on. It's as my sister says, do these people really know the real you? And I often say, no. So it's amazing how much you can get away with by wearing a clerical collar. Let's just say that. So so I think this is our first episode. What do you think?
I think that, yeah, that was pretty good. There's a barking dog in the background now.
I hear it, and it's annoying. Can you please put a muzzle on it?
I know. We can't get her to stop. Somebody's outside. We'll obviously edit that out. So we should close the show. Is there anything that we want to tell our one listener?
Yes. How do they talk with us? All right. Here's a couple of things we want you to know. We'd love for you to continue to support our show. You can send us an email at churchforatheist@gmail.com. I haven't set it up yet, so I hope it's available. we want you to leave us a voicemail as well. We would love to receive your voicemail. Can I tell you why I want people to leave voicemails?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Because I'm a huge listener of Dan Savage. And mm-hmm. I love the fact that people leave voicemails and ask questions. Like, can we be like the next Dan Savage show for atheists and pastors? Like,
I don't think that you could handle me on a Dan Savage show.
Okay.
I have lots of thoughts.
Why don't we get Dan Savage to be on our show?
Huh. Not bad. Maybe once we get beyond one listener, he'd be interested.
Okay. And then, you know, the other segment in the show I think we should do on occasion is if you believe it, what is that religious saying? Like, claim it and receive it? So I want to like claim something out in the universe and then like believe that it's going to happen.
Again, we'll workshop that segment. Okay.
So just for the record, I want to claim that I'm going to be on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah. Oprah, if you're listening, I love you.
Oh, we do love Oprah.
Oh, see, all of a sudden you're like, oh, we're going to like workshop this. Now when I drop Oprah's name, you're like, oh yeah, let's do it.
So I don't believe in God. But if I did, she would probably look like Oprah. You know what I mean?
You know, that's not a bad look, actually.
There you go. Exactly. So we want to hear from you. So definitely email us your thoughts. Let us know things that you think we can add to the podcast. That'll be fun or interesting.
And once again, our phone number is 202-599-6626. You have 6 days to leave me a message or I'm going to lose this account. So make sure.
And don't forget to subscribe.
Click the subscribe button. It'll feed our egos and we'll know whether or not we should actually do another episode. Anything else we should do?
I don't know. How often are we going to do this episode or do an episode?
I would love to do an episode every 2 weeks.
That's a tall order. We'll see how it goes.
Well, just hit the subscribe button. So if we ever do another episode, your Apple iPhone will let you know that there's a new podcast waiting. How about that?
That's great. And tell, you can email us and tell us how often you want to hear from us.
That's a good idea. And yeah, you can, last thing, you can check our website out at churchforatheists.com.
Alrighty. So good. Are we done now?
We are done. Thank you so much for joining us, and goodbye.